Our last case on this morning's call is number 02-1467. Ahmed against the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Mr. Noonan.
May I please the court, counsel, my name is James Noonan. We are here on the appeal of a district court's denial of, or dismissal of the complaint for effectively mandamus relief. As your honors are aware, while this case was being briefed, the Seventh Circuit issued the opinion in Adair versus INS, which effectively addressed most of the issues at issue in this appeal. Nevertheless, I believe that the district court, the Seventh Circuit in the Adair case, that panel was missed a couple important issues that I think are different here, and that I think still mandate dismissal of, or a reversal of the dismissal order.
When you say that, are you asking us to reconsider the outcome in Adair, which is, of course, not something we often do, but it's possible under Rule 40E and other things, or are you saying that there are such important distinctions between your case and Adair that Adair can stand and we should still come out the other way for you?
Judge, with all due respect, it's more the former than the latter.
Yeah, I would think so, actually.
With all due frankness, the only factual difference between Adair and the present case is that in Adair, the applicants were seeking an adjustment of status application. They were in country. Whereas here, Ms. Ahmed was
in Pakistan. Yeah.
So her petition, visa petition, was being brought under a different statute of the code. But nevertheless, all the claims were brought under the diversity visa application process.
Well, of course, the fact that she's in Pakistan does indicate, that she doesn't have any further hearing at which she can raise all of these points. But on the other hand, and against you, it means that as a non-U.S. citizen or resident living outside the United States, she doesn't have any particular rights under U.S. law.
That's correct.
So no right to a hearing anyway.
We contend that her rights would be her right to have the State Department process her application. Is it duty bound?
But why is it duty-bound to do that? Why can't they just randomly throw half of them in the wastebasket if they feel like it, or give their staff an Islamabad golf holidays every afternoon?
Well, that same question was asked by Justice Flom, I believe, in the Adair matter, which I represented the plaintiffs on that. Because the statute, a close reading of the applicable statutes and regulations, don't give the government that authority. They say that those applications shall be processed. All of the language here in the applicable statutes refer to the word shall, which means that the government is obligated. It has a obligation and duty to process these applications. Furthermore, we contend under a fair reading of the law in this area, that obligation is to process these applications within a reasonable time.
In other words, if she had moved for mandamus before the date deadline, she would be in a completely different situation because we would have had jurisdiction. Is that your argument?
Well, just that's an interesting argument that both is referenced in a footnote in the Adair opinion and also referenced in some other opinions. If you agree with the government's analysis that once the fiscal year expires, it can do nothing. And the fact that there was even an order, as in Pinescu, which is a case from this district, and Marchetic, which is a case from this district, even if the court had ordered the INS to do that, they can say, fine, judge, we'll do that. They wait till the end of the fiscal year deadline and say, judge, you can't do that. And that's why I think there's an ultimate inconsistency in the court's ruling in Adair, because that distinction is really a distinction without a difference if you agree with the government's argument that it can't do anything. We cited in our reply brief a case from New York. We attached an exhibit to that. Yet another opinion or another case where it was a 1998 diversity visa lottery application, and then we attached the approval, which took place after the end of the fiscal year.
Yeah.
The government does this. That's what we're trying to focus on. The government does this, and I don't think, given the language of the statute, that it can do this as it sees fit. It has to do this in some sort of order, and it has to do this with in conformity with the statutes and regulations which require that all applications that are approved, I mean all applications by EV winners should be adjudicated.
Could we talk about venue for a minute?
Certainly.
Because in her complaint, Ms. Zaman alleged that she lived in Illinois.
That was an error in the pleading, and I made reference to that in my brief. She resides in Pakistan.
Right. In other words, I just wanted to be absolutely clear. She never lived in Illinois, did she?
Never.
Never.
Yeah. And I apologize. I just footnote that in the brief that she, for all purposes, has always lived in Pakistan, made her application to the U.S. consulate in Islamabad, Pakistan. As I said, I think the opinion, the arguments of the government in Adir, in the arguments of the government here, are inconsistent if you really follow the logical thread here, which is that irrespective of when in the Pineschew and the underlying district court cases where the complaints for mandamus relief were filed before the expiration of the fiscal year deadline, it shouldn't make a whit of difference whether there was either a court order or even a complaint filed before that time. If the government's position is correct that once the fiscal year expires, it's over, it's a distinction without a difference. I believe actually the better reasoning is the reasoning employed by the district court in the case cited in our brief in Niaga versus INF. I also represented the plaintiff in that case, and in Niaga, the court actually, for the first opinion that we've seen, actually, who focused on the language of the statute and what this term eligibility means, the court said, I think very cogently and persuasively, that because DV, diversity visa applicants, because there are more applicants than there are visas available, that the eligibility, the term eligibility used in those statutes don't mean eligibility to receive a visa, but eligibility to be considered for a visa. And if you agree with that analysis, these parties all are still eligible to be considered for a visa because they have completed their part of the application process. I admit it's a fine distinction, but I think it's the only distinction I've heard that makes any sense to me, given this obviously confusing area. I'd like to save a few minutes to rebut the issue on the doctrine of concept of non-reviewability and other matters. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Noonan. Mr. Bernstein.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jeffrey Bernstein, as you've noted, and
yes.
I represent the government.
Mr. Bernstein, I have a favor to ask of you.
Surely, if I can.
I'm looking at Exhibit 1, this letter, which was sent to Ms. Ahmed, and I'm contrasting in my mind, let's say, the tone one gets from this letter with what you have outlined in your brief as the actual state of affairs. This letter, something along the lines of a publisher's clearinghouse notice, begins with the word congratulations, which already makes people think that something good has happened. And it goes on to set forth particularized things that the person can do. And then they'll get a decision, they think. From this. Whereas, in fact, if one reads your brief, one understands that that's not true at all. There's consular unreviewability. There is an absolute lack of access to the courts. You could put every third application on the wall and play darts with it. There's absolutely nothing that the person in Islamabad can do about government deliberate indifference, government negligence, government frivolity. It's just tough luck as far as you're concerned, and so this letter is a very misleading letter. It shouldn't begin with the word congratulations. It should simply say If you're still interested in pursuing this, you may, but we are not guaranteeing you anything, be able to do this, but there's nothing you can do about it. You would probably reduce the incidence of this kind of litigation if you were more honest in these letters. And it just offends me deeply to think that we're sending these, as I say, they remind me of Publishers Clearinghouse, you know, these things saying, you're a winner in the Visa lottery, congratulations, you know, great, great, great. Whereas, in fact, from Adir and from at least the tenor of your argument, you have exactly zero.
You're merely the messenger. And, you know, but I want to tell you that that letter made me weep.
I understand both of your honors' problems. It could be construed as misleading. I suppose the INS would say, congratulations, you're entered in a lottery. You have an opportunity that you did not have before. You're a foreign national, and now you have an opportunity to come to the United States. Most foreign nationals would believe that congratulations would be in order. It's true, as you said in Adir, that promise may be somewhat illusory.
It is illusory. Don't say somewhat illusory, since your whole point, which we said in Adir was, at least for these people who address the course after the expiration of that year's program, but they are non-human. They don't exist as people if they aren't in the United States and are aliens, which is the word that we use. And so they can't in any way require the correct processing to occur.
Well, they don't have any rights. That's true, Your Honor.
Correct.
And we're speaking, let me distinguish. This case is distinguishable from Adir. It doesn't help Ms. Ahmed, but it's distinguishable from Adir precisely on the grounds that counsel indicated, and you all agreed, that Ms. Ahmed is not in the United States.
So Judge Guzman was wrong, of course, to say, well, you know, she can just raise this later on when she has her removal hearing.
To be honest with you, I don't recall that being in the decision, but I'm not, I'm not disputing you, Your Honor. I guess, if I may, I'd like to start my argument by saying that Adir does control. I don't know of any rule of the court which would empower this panel to vacate it.
But could I just refer you to page 6 and 7 of his opinion?
Yeah.
Plaintiff has not exhausted all of her administrative remedies. Plaintiff may raise her claim before an immigration hearing officer when removal proceedings commence.
Your Honor, the judge below, respectfully, Judge Guzman, did not misstate there. He analyzed it under the doctrine of consular non-reviewability, and then he said, even assuming that the petitioner is correct that she's in the United States, she still can't prevail, and that's the component of the decision.
No, I understand. I'm just saying he thought that there was some safety valve out there, and of course, because, as you point out, she's in Pakistan, there isn't.
I don't think he did. I think he decided under consular non-reviewability the court had no power at all, but assuming that she was in the country, that she did have avenues such as Mr. Adir had, but he did not. He certainly did not.
Do you think he thought then that she had been in Illinois? I mean, is that
no?
No. Okay.
No. No. He covered all of his bases, essentially. He didn't have to, but he did. I mean, there was a stipulation before the court, in fact, before he issued a decision, that she was not in Illinois. So Adir controls. There doesn't seem to be any possible reason why this court could overturn Adir. Counsel hasn't moved for rehearing, and I don't believe a petition for certiorari has.
Well, it doesn't make any difference. We frequently reconsider cases in a new case. I mean, there's a proceeding. Whether we would or not is a whole different question.
Well,
I'm
Adir,
not saying that there's any.
Well, Adir applies four square to this
sure.
case.
And we would have to have a formal circuit proceeding to reconsider Adir before we could do anything.
Right. But let me just say, aside from Adir, obviously we make the argument on consular non-reviewability. I think the case that you all should read is the Bruno case, Bruno versus Albright, which is a perfectly wonderful explication of the doctrine and why it works and why it doesn't matter that somebody from the United States
doesn't have any right to anything. Unfortunately, that's the case. I mean, that's just the case. Unfortunately for Ms.
Ahmed. We just don't tell people that that's the case.
I think along the way, I mean, we certainly don't say it out loud, but we do indicate certainly the record here shows that there were warnings that, you know, don't believe that you're going to be a citizen just because
right.
you won the lottery.
Don't have a baby. Don't have your village bombed. You know, don't in any way, you know, fail to show up.
I understand your frustration, Your Honor, and I wish there was something I could say to make you feel better about the case, but I don't think there is.
I don't think there is either, and it's certainly not your... I'm not blaming you personally, I assure you.
Thank you. With respect to Ms. Ahmed's argument with respect to the shall be process, I do want to point out that is a mistake, I think, in the Adir decision when they found that Mr. Adir had the right to have his visa petition acted upon within the appropriate time. The regs, the statutory provisions that the court cites do contain the word shall, but those statutory provisions have nothing to do with an obligation to process a visa petition. And the regulations that the court cites doesn't have anything to do with saying that the INS has an obligation to process the visa petition. The only petition that those regulations refer to is the diversity visa petition, not the actual visa petition. So Adir was wrong with respect to that component, but they reached the result, either for the result reached by the majority or the result described by the concurrence. Either it's moot or there was no rights to a visa. And again, Adir, I think, compels that conclusion. If there are no further questions, Your Honor, I have nothing further to say except that the court should dismiss on the basis of consular non-reviewability. If not that, then adhere and affirm the determination of the district court judge that he did not have jurisdiction over the case. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Burns. Mr. Noonan.
With respect to the issue of the doctrine or the effect and application of the doctrine of consular non-reviewability, I believe, with all due respect, that's a red herring. What we have asked for in this case, and Adir and all these other cases, is not for the court to interfere with a consular official's decision or discretion in determining whether or not to grant somebody a visa. We are asking a government official to carry out non-delegable ministerial duties and to process that application. The two cases cited in our brief both have rejected the conclusion of consular non-reviewability on that very basis, where the plaintiff is not seeking the court to review a decision, but rather to compel the government to do something that it's otherwise compelled to do. I think that issue is a red herring. Your Honor is correct that in the lower court, Judge Guzman was under the misapprehension that there was some administrative remedy available to Ms. Ahmed, and that misapprehension arose in the context of denying the mandamus claim, which one of the elements, as you know, is that we have failed to exhaust administrative remedies. He contended that in a removal proceeding, we can bring up all these issues again. As we know, as Ms. Ahmed is in Pakistan, that's not an issue. With respect to counsel's suggestion that that there is no obligation on behalf of the government to process the application, I contend the court need only look at a dozen or so cases that have addressed this issue and have found under these statutes that the government does have a duty to opt to process and adjudicate these applications, and to do so within a reasonable time. In addition to Adir, there's Pinescu from this district, Agnew-Mabel from this district, Niagara versus Ashcroft, Devone versus Thornburg. Just a series of cases that have all found that the government is obligated to process visa applications. Not how they do it or when they do it, but they are obligated to do it. And that was the whole purpose of bringing this case, compel the government to do that. If the court isn't satisfied with that, Section 55B of the Administrative Procedures Act does expressly say.
Mr. Newton, your time now has expired.
Thank you. Do you have any questions?
Our thanks both Mr. Noonan and Mr. Bernstein. The case will be taken under advisement. We've completed the call of the morning, and therefore the court will rise until the next scheduled hearing.